Good morning, everyone. We're pleased to have with us today Sergeant Glenn Fifield on the Behind the Badge program. Sergeant Fifield, good morning to you.
Good morning. How are you this morning?
I'm doing well and glad you're back. For those people that might be tuning in for the very first time, Sergeant Fifield is here on the first Saturday of every month on this pre-recorded broadcast talking about everything that is state police. And we may be able to use your question on the air, and we'll tell you at the end of this program how you can send in your question to us. We have several things we want to talk to Sergeant Fifield about today. I'm sure at some point in time you have testified in court.
I've had to testify several times in different situations. I've arrested quite a few drunk drivers over the course of my career, so I've had to give some depositions and give a couple of trial testimonies in my career. One that stands out in my mind is several years ago, I think it was 2001, 2002, but the Pines Bank robbery up in Porter, Indiana. I responded to that situation. Several bad things occurred in that day, including two people lost their lives. A security guard was shot, and he later passed away as a result of his injuries. But the state police and I believe the FBI was able to track down culprits that committed that crime. They end up being charged in federal court in Hammond. So I had to go to that trial and testify in that case. Most of it was at the sentencing hearing portion of it. But that's one of the ones that stands out in my mind that was the first time and only time and hopefully the last time that I have to testify in federal court. It's overwhelming when you walk into a federal courthouse as opposed to a state or county facility because it's just wonder. It's massive. It's very fancy. And it can be overwhelming. So it was very interesting. It's something that sticks out in my mind.
There was a unique, I thought it was unique anyway, about a person that was arrested on the Interstate 65. And I believe it was you that sent out a press release to myself and other members of the media. This person, he was reporting driving 8 miles per hour on Interstate 65 before he later fled officers. He drove the wrong way on Interstate 65. He damaged law enforcement vehicles. Is it rather unusual to have someone that's arrested for driving under the speed limit?
Yeah, that day was a very interesting day. I ended up actually getting involved in that pursuit and that call. I was just getting off work. I had 5 or 10 minutes to go left in my shift, and the call came out. The trooper was trying to get a car. That car stopped. It was reported driving, like said, 8 miles an hour on I-65. So as all your listeners know, that's just a little bit out of the ordinary, I guess you could say. Definitely got his attention as well as the passing motorist. But he called it in, and the car wasn't stopping right away. And I just had this gut feeling that this was going to be one of those circumstances that I probably needed to get out there to. So I rushed out there as quick as I could and got out there. And like you said, the driver didn't stop. Several stop stick deployments were involved. We were able to deflate his tires, and we took some other initiatives to stop the vehicle. The driver ended up ramming, I believe, 4 or 5 state police cars and also a Jasper County Sheriff's Department car. They came up to the interstate and assisted us, and they were extremely important and useful and helped out tremendously in this particular situation. If it hadn't been for them, it could have went on even longer. So that deputy really came in at the right time. But when the suspect started driving the wrong way on the roadway, that's when we had to really take some extraordinary actions to stop him. That doesn't happen often. It's usually 99 out of 100 calls about drivers on the interstate is because someone's driving recklessly speeding, passing on a shoulder, you know, like I said, recklessly speeding over 100 miles an hour. Rare that we get a call of someone going 8 miles an hour. We could get a call of someone going under the speed limit, maybe 45, you know, 55, something like that, which also causes a problem. But 8, that doesn't happen every day. I think I maybe think of one other time when that might have happened in my career. There have been a lot of videos posted on Facebook about the situation. We were able to take him into custody, fortunately, without any civilians getting hurt.
If I'm not mistaken, he was not preliminarily charged with under the influence.
Right. There's actually some stuff going on right now behind the scenes that we're waiting on some test results for, as far as I know. But he was charged with attempted murder because of his actions of ramming the police cars, the officers driving directly at one of our officers who was on the side of the road attempting to deploy stop sticks. So when he did that action, that's where the attempted murder charge came in, because it was definitely an intentional act. That's one of the things where we've talked about in the past about our body cameras and in-car cameras. It's a great tool for law enforcement and prosecutors, as well as the public. They get to see when we say this happened, Now we have the body cam footage, the in-car camera footage to show this is exactly what happened. This is why this person was charged with doing an intentional act. And you have the camera footage there to back it up. And that came in extremely useful in this case the other day.
Well, recently, an Indiana State Trooper, Aaron Smith of Franklin, was killed in the line of duty. And our condolences to you, Sergeant Fifield, and all members of the Indiana State Police. Whenever something like this tragically happens, how are troopers honored when they pass away in the line of duty?
We have a state police alliance that is very active in taking care of arrangements as well as our own department, and also the Indiana FOP, the Fraternal Order of Police. They get involved as well. And we do a full honors ceremony as well as a full honor burial at the cemetery, if the family so wishes, which typically they do. That involves full honors. Is we have our honor guard, we have the riderless horseman. There's a lot that goes into fallen officer funeral. In the last month, we've lost three officers here in Indiana and a canine officer in Gary here right after the three officers. So we've had a really tough month here in this state. I can't recall in my 27 years of law enforcement a tougher three-week stretch than what we've gone through here last week of June into July. It's been rough. It's been hard on the officers. It's been one of those wake-up calls that this job is a dangerous job. It's a dangerous career. It has its rewards, a sense of fulfillment. But at the end of the day, there is that risk that when an officer walks out and says goodbye to his family, they may not come home. And when we have these situations where we have to bury one of our own, it really hits home for all of us. That sense and that feeling of mortality is could be your next call.
You touched on a Gary Police Canine Unit was killed in the line of duty as well. How are canines recognized when this happens to them?
So it's very similar. When a canine passes in the line of duty, very hard on the handler because that's his partner or her partner for however long they've been together. I know the Gary officer was over, I think it was close to 10 years, maybe 12 years that they'd been together. So he was a canine officer for that department for a long time. So their officers knew him. Members of the community knew him. They knew that dog. The canine is an officer, for lack of a better word. And so when that happens, that canine is laid to rest in a very similar fashion with honors. They go through a ceremony just like for a police officer. Obviously, it won't be at a cemetery. There's a very similar set of actions and things that each agency does to honor that canine. One thing that really is impressive when a canine does pass in the line of duty is canines from all around the state, even canine officers from outside the state, will come to a police funeral for that canine. And the same thing with one of our officers as well. I know when Trooper Smith, when he passed, there were troopers there from as far away as California Highway Patrol to a New York Police Department. Officers come far and wide to pay their respects to a fallen officer. And we do the same thing as well with the Indiana State Police. When another officer in another state is killed in the line of duty, usually when it's a state police agency, we will send one or two officers as a show of support and respect.
Periodically, you have to attend education classes for your career. What classes are you required to take, and how often do you take them?
Well, I think a lot of people would say we need to take more because I'm not very smart, but there's some things that are required every year, and some of those are our CPR training, legal update training. We do firearms training. It's like a defensive tactics, so hand-on arrest techniques that we do. And those are the main ones that we do every year. We do a lot of online training when it comes to hacker-type stuff with our computers. We get these little tests and stuff, and they send us these tests to make sure we're not going to click on a link that could have a potential virus in there. Those are the main areas that we train in every year. It's similar training. It's not the same every year, but like firearms, we do several times a year. Like defensive tactics, we do a couple times a year. Legal update is obviously only one time a year. We talked about that last time I was on the show. Legal update is where they update us on the new laws that the legislators passed, which typically go into effect July 1st each year.
You've spoken previously on this program about the new post that's being built near your current post. Is there an update on when that might open?
I'm always the bearer of bad news. We don't know when it's going to open. We just got delayed again. We're hoping, I got my fingers crossed here, we're hoping for mid to late September. There's a chance it could be pushed off to October. We just keep running into little hiccups here and there. They don't want to turn over possession of the building to our department until everything is squared away, because that's when the warranty starts, is when we walk in the building and take ownership. So they want to make sure everything is up and running 100% before we walk in there and say, okay, this is our building. Now, saying that, I was just in a boy, is it nice. Walk in there, it's got the new house smell. It's like a new car. It's like you got that new car smell in the new building. To walk in there and see the new office furniture and the new carpet, and everything's brand new. And obviously it's a new house, but new building. But when you're walking through there, you just get so antsy. So I try not going in there as much as I can. I just stay in my old office. It's coming along, hopefully the end of September. Let's hope.
Indiana has a number of license plates, as you know, and our listeners know as well. That probably makes your job a little bit more difficult. And some vehicles I see with license plate holders that have either a slogan on them or perhaps a business name's on them. What do people have to remember when they have their license plate inside one of these license plate holders?
As long as they don't block the view of the plate, they're okay. You see a lot of them with, they'll have Indiana University on them, or I guess there's another university. I've heard of it at Purdue.
Be careful now.
I know. I'm in Purdue country. I got to be careful. I know. But I've heard it's a university. I don't know. If it says Purdue, Indiana University, Valparaiso University, that's fine. I mean, those are fine, as long as it's not blocking the view. Now, what you do see a lot of times is folks will put a cover over the top of it, a tinted cover. That actually is technically an improper display because it's blocking the view. At nighttime, you can't see the plate. So you can be pulled over and given a citation for that. It's not one of those things that we typically are out looking for, but it's one of those things you can be stopped for. So just be aware of that.
Well, speaking of display, is it proper to display a license plate anywhere other than on your back of your car, or in some states like Illinois on the front? Mm-hmm. Can you place one in your back window or someplace else?
Russ, I'm old enough to remember, and I don't know about you, I can remember when you could put the paper, when you got a new vehicle, you'd put the paper plate in the rear window, right? Well, they don't do that anymore. Now they give you, it's a more rigid, firmer paper plate that actually screws on the back of the car and the vehicle that you have. So it attaches to the rear bumper just like a regular license plate. So there's no reason to have a plate in the rear window anymore. Obviously, Indiana does not have the front license plate, so that is not really relevant to our state. No more paper plates in the rear window.
You're listening to Behind the Badge with Public Information Officer with the Indiana State Police at Lowell, Sergeant Glenn Fifield. Behind the Badge is brought to you by Truck Vault. Truck Vault builds secure storage systems for police and public safety vehicles. Keep your weapons and tactical gear safe and secure with Truck Vault. Get an instant quote online at truckvault.com. Something that was in the news recently, and that is there was a SWAT team that was called to the town of Hebron that we had on the news, and I believe you might have put out this press release again as well. It stated on there that there were a number of police agencies, police and sheriff's department agencies, I believe around 16, that were involved in investigating this case. Some of those agencies were down in this area. Tell us how the state police and these police agencies other than state police work together to make an arrest.
Yeah, so that case came together through a real coordinated effort between all the agencies that you mentioned. If I was to sit here and try to mention them, I'd at least one of them out. The lead agency in this particular case is the LaPorte County Sheriff's Department. Captain Andy Hynek really spearheaded this investigation, and along with the Indiana State Police and several other law enforcement agencies. So with everyone's work, they got together. They had a meeting at the post. They looked over different evidence they had, the suspect information, everything in the case, and they were able to basically piece together. You know, they had one agency had this information, second agency had the same information, third agency had very similar information. So it was a real coordinated effort to get these search warrants together, signed off by a judge, arrest warrants signed by several judges in different counties. We were able to successfully bring this case to an arrest of two individuals that were charged with the theft in this theft case, and a third individual who had a separate warrant for failing to appear for a driving offense. a lot of work, and a lot of times it's difficult to get law enforcement agencies on the same page. But to everyone's credit, this was not one of those situations. The good of working together and taking these two individuals off the street and stopping these thefts was the goal, and they accomplished that goal. I know a lot of people have asked, why did we use the SWAT team when we serve these warrants? So there's a protocol that we go through that we analyze when SWAT will be used to serve a search warrant. And if certain things are checked off on this checklist, then SWAT is utilized. And that is not only for the officer's safety, but it's also for the suspect's safety as well as the community that are involved. Our SWAT team is highly trained, as every SWAT team here in Northwest Indiana is highly trained. They know what they're doing. They're paid to train literally every day for just these search warrant executions. So they did it flawlessly. The suspects came out without any problems whatsoever. It came to a good conclusion. That's a little bit as to why we use the SWAT team. I can't get into the specifics, but there's generalities into a checklist, and what certain things reach a certain criteria, then we use the SWAT.
The Indiana State Police has recently released information regarding your recruiting academy.
We are really excited. We just started accepting applications for the 85th recruit class, and that's going to be open here for the next couple weeks. We started accepting applications in late July. We are looking for you. We want you to be an Indiana State Trooper, and if you have any desire to do so, we would love to hear from you. You can go to indianatrooper.com. There you can go to the link to submit your application. It's very easy to do. It'll only take a couple minutes. We will get your information and be in contact with you. And or on the indianatrooper.com webpage, there is the physical requirements, push-ups, sit-ups, all that kind of stuff that hopefully everybody's been working on and getting ready for the academy. And then there's no surprises. So when you take the physical agility test, everything is right there and you'll be able to pass it. So, hey, before we move on to the next thing, I know everybody's on Facebook. And if they follow me on Facebook, they already know this. And maybe you already know this as well. But, Russ, I brought something in for you today. You are now in the Fifield Fan Club. There's a button.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So that's a highly prized possession there. And
is this your high school picture? Or?
That is not my high school picture. My high school picture would probably be better looking than that one. But
I wouldn't have said that, but you made a comment about Purdue, so I thought I had to.
Oh, there we go. Here we go. But, yeah, so one of our...
Well, thank you.
One of our young ladies at the Post, when I got promoted several years ago, started this fan club thinking I would get mad about it, and she was making fun of me. So I took it and ran with it. And she made these buttons as a joke, and now everybody, when I see people, they ask me for buttons. So it's a joke. It's not real. It's funny. I can't believe that it gets the attention that it's got. Hopefully Chelsea's listening right now. And thank you, Chelsea, for starting this fan club. Whenever I mention this fan club or I mention her that she started it, she just rolls her eyes. It makes her skin crawl. So
I appreciate the button, by the
way.
No
problem. And I'm going to make sure you wear it. I wish I could have got it to you sooner so you could warn it to the fair. Speaking of the fair, we got the Indiana State Fair. Fair is going on now. It's like 4 weeks. It's long.
Except for on Mondays and Tuesdays.
Mondays and Tuesdays. Yes, Mondays and Tuesdays it's closed. Go down to the state fair. Stop by one of the PIO, the public information booths, and say hi to the troopers there. They're always looking for people to say hi to. But I've worked it in the past, not working it this year, but it's a good time from what I understand.
We invite our listeners to send in questions that are law enforcement related to the broadcast, and we might use your question on the air. There's one of three ways you can send in your questions. Send them to Facebook, 97.7 FM, WLQI, the Q. You can email us at news@2EVILLE.com. That's news@2EVILLE.com. Or you can mail us your question to Tuiville Media at Post Office Box D, Rensselaer, 47978, and we may use your question. You've been listening to Behind the Badge, a pre-recorded program with Public Information Officer Glenn Fifield of the Lowell Post of the Indiana State Police. Sergeant Fifield, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. Looking forward to next time.
Join us next time, the first Saturday of every month at 7 a.m. Behind the Badge here on the Q.